TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Coming up on today's program, joining us in about an hour and a half or so, Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com. He covers the Washington Capitals, so he's going to join us on the program. And then a little bit later on in the program, Damian Cristadero, he covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's going to join us ahead of the Lightning-Jets game in Winnipeg on Tuesday night. 3 hours of Jets talk and hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Going to be spending a lot of time discussing Dustin Byfuglien and his future as a Winnipeg Jet. Is it a future that's going to see him as a forward? Is it a future that's going to see him as a defenseman? Or is it a future that's going to see him playing for another team? We'll discuss that in the coming hour. But before that, I will say hello to my colleagues, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. Glad to be back at our regular time slot and a little break in the Jets action, so I'm glad to have a little of...
You need to recharge your batteries?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, take a couple days off, that sort of thing.
Right.
I hear you. Richie, how you doing, bud?
You know, I'm doing well. I hopped on the warm-up show yesterday with Hustler and Remus guaranteed us that he'd be here on time, and of course, 30 seconds before the show began, Remus popped in the door.
So, he's a man of his word, is what you're saying. He was able to make it. It was just under the wire, but he made it nonetheless. You know, we have to start, obviously, this week. We're going to start with looking back at the week that was with the Winnipeg Jets and how everything has played out in terms of the race for the final spots, the Southeast Division lead, and the final playoff spots in the Eastern Conference. The Jets took care of business this week by winning all three games that they had to win. And, you know, last Saturday on this program, we said when there was 9 games left for the Jets, we said we think 7 wins out of 9 will get them into the playoffs. The Jets have won 3 of those 9 games. But looking at what all the teams around them have done, I honestly don't think anymore the Jets have that can afford to lose 2 games.
They probably can't, Drew. I know we talked about it last week, you know, as you mentioned, 7-2 kind of being what they needed to get them in the conversation, to give them a quality shot. And as you mentioned, the other teams have succeeded, you know, in terms of their play. So then I think what happens is you have to adjust that, and they've won 3 in a row. And as you to go 4-2 over the remaining 6 games, I think Drew's right, doesn't get you in. 5-1 may get you in, gives you certainly a better shot. And then obviously 6-0, I think 6-0 gets you in. But
I'll tell you what, if 6-0 doesn't get you in, I mean, if you run the table and you win your last 9 games, or you get at least points in your last 9 games,
I think based on the matchups and the other teams playing each other, 6-0 has to get them in or close to it.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, Drew, you know, 6-0, that would mean the Jets would go 9-0 to end the season. I don't think that's feasible at all. And I know you take it on a game-by-game basis, but I just don't think that's possible. So I think, Ezzy, at this point in time, for a Jets fan, the best you can hope for right now is 5-1. And that gives you a pretty good shot. But again, you know, there aren't any guarantees.
That's the problem when you don't control your own destiny, and that's right. The situation the Jets are in right now is they need help. They've done everything that they can do so far in this past week. In the last 7 days, they've done what they needed to do. 3 clean wins in terms of, you know, no overtime or anything else. But all the teams around them have played astoundingly good hockey.
There's going to be a lot of scoreboard watching, that's for sure. Richie mentioned, you know, 6-0. There's a good chance that if they don't go 6-0, you know, they're going to be in a position where other teams control their fate. But they're not going to get help from you know, any other teams, and why would they? You know, they won these 3 games here, and if they don't win those 3 games, we're not even having this conversation. So, you know, it's a situation where a lot of hockey fans in Winnipeg are optimistic right now after these 3 wins, but it's not going to get any easier here. You could still have to win out your 3 games to finish out this homestand. And then, as I said, you're looking Drew, at you know, a few other teams here that are going to have to lose a couple games, because you know, a team like Washington, who is going to come into tonight's game versus the Lightning, you know, winners of six of their last six games, if you don't get, if they don't falter, then your only chance is really passing the Islanders, the Rangers, for that last playoff spot.
And these games, these teams as don't have to run the table, you know, with that little buffer that they have, they can lose a game or two, or they can, you know, lose a game in overtime even. Whereas the Jets don't have the margin of error, and it's not a significant margin of error for the other teams, but it's a margin of error nonetheless.
I agreed wholeheartedly there. I mean, you just look at you look at it, and you check the records of the teams the Jets are chasing. Islanders, 8-1-1 in their last 10, and it's even better than that when you go beyond their last 10. Mm-hmm. The Rangers, I think, are something like 4-1-1 in their last 6. I mean, Ottawa was the team that had been struggling. But now they've won two games in a row. Their win against New Jersey last night, they were outshot 33-11, and they still won 2-0.
Absolutely, you know that.
I mean, if you're a Jets fan, you're looking at
that's kind of been their calling card in terms of the not getting outshot by that margin. But the defense and goaltending. You look at the schedules, and we're going to break those down later in the show. Also, very home heavy for a team that's dominant at home.
Yeah, I mean, the Senators have lost, what, I believe, 3 times at home all season long? Yeah, 13-3-3 at home all year long. So the fact that they're at home, it plays to their advantage. You look at the standings, and with the Senators sort of having, they got their footing underneath them again, I think that they're almost close, pretty close to being declared safe. You know, it's unlikely that...
Well, it probably close, Drew, the buffer they have over 9th, taking into account the fact that they have 7 games remaining, 5 of which are at home. I mean, and we're going to brand every team's schedule, but that 5 of which are at home. They don't have an entirely easy schedule, but 5 of 7 at home, with the way that they kind of tailed off for a while, I see them picking it up and finishing stronger. Obviously, these two wins have helped, and you get Mihalik back. Yes, you can't overlook that. You know, he scores a goal yesterday. That's a big addition. You know, it shores up your left wing spot. He's a power forward. He can shoot. He can skate. That's, you know, you can't discount that.
Then you look at the Washington Capitals, who, of course, the Jets are battling for the lead in the Southeast Division, and the Capitals play Tampa Bay tonight. The Capitals, 8-1-1 in the last 6, and have won 6, or pardon me, 8-1-1 in the last 10, and have won 6 games in a row. The Jets just are getting no help whatsoever on the scoreboard.
Yeah, it's tough, and again, this goes back to, you know, earlier in the season when you have games against these teams and you don't take care of it, well, then you look back and you say, hey, you know, we can't necessarily win out or win 8 of 9 or whatever it may be and guarantee ourselves a spot. That's the problem. And I think if the Jets don't end up making it, which is entirely possible and probably likely based on the odds right now, they're going to look back and say Thursday, Friday at home against Washington.
Yeah,
we could have finished off Washington. Even splitting that gives it a lot. It's a huge game. It's a 4-point swing. And they didn't lose those games. They got dominated in those games. They didn't lose 3-2 and 2-1 from the final 6-1 and 4-0, something along those lines.
I think the aggregate was 10-1 being outscored in two games.
And if you look back and say, holy smokes, at home no less, we lost 10-1, two games combined, against our division rival who we could have finished off there. The Jets will be kicking themselves if they don't make the playoffs, and I think it'll be based upon those two games.
What I think you're seeing in the Eastern Conference right now, and we were discussing this off-air before the show, and I think we were sort of the opinion that the New Jersey Devils are now done. They're 4 points behind the Jets for 9th, so they're in 10th place right now.
But, Drew, just to interrupt quickly, they also don't have the tiebreaker, so they're essentially 5 points back.
Right. They've only won 13 games in regulation. They have no tiebreaker. They've only got one win in their last 10 games. They've got some points in by getting those games to overtime, but they're 1-5-4 in their last 10. So you're looking at really the top 9 teams in the Eastern Conference, including the Winnipeg Jets, are really beating up on teams 10 through 15 right now in the Eastern Conference.
Right, so if you're the Winnipeg Jets, and having said that, means you're not going to catch the Washington Capitals. So you're in a situation right now where you have to catch one of the Ottawa Senators, the New York Islanders, the New York Rangers. So you look at the schedule and you're hoping for one of those two teams. Now, neither one of those teams is currently on a slide like the Ottawa Senators were or the New Jersey Devils are. So you're in a situation where you're scoreboard watching, and if you're hoping to win 4 or 6 of your games, mm-hmm. you're hoping that one of those teams goes on a slide. That's the only way the Jets are going to get in here. Yeah. It's great to win all of these games, But because they're going to be watching either one of the Rangers or Islanders get a point tonight, really, you can't say you control your own destiny. Of course, you have to win your games. If they don't win the games, we're not even having this conversation next week. But you still have to hope that one of the Islanders, the Rangers, in my opinion, goes on a slide.
And the question is, the Islanders play the Rangers tonight. They play on Long Island. The question is, who do you want to win? And we kind of went back and forth on this before the show.
And there was no right answer. It's really just a matter of opinion. I was of the opinion, you look at the standings, the Rangers, the Islanders and the Jets will have played the most number of games after tonight's game.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers will still have one game in hand on the Jets. I thought you're okay with the Rangers winning tonight, and then so they'd be tied with the Islanders in terms of points. Two up on the Winnipeg Jets with one game still in hand, just because I don't think you want the Islanders to be 4 points ahead of the Winnipeg Jets having played the same number of games, because, again, it's hard to make up two games in the last six that you're playing in the regular season.
The other argument against that, of course, is that the Islanders are coming to town on next Saturday, week today, and you can beat them clean. You control that. You can beat them clean. And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's why I think you want them within 2 points. If you keep them within 2 points coming into next Saturday's game, then and you win next Saturday, assuming you beat them next Saturday, you're gonna leapfrog the Islanders because you have both the tiebreaker and you'll have played the same number of games and everything else. So it will look good at that point in time that they would be in a playoff spot, assuming that both those teams, assuming the Islanders lose tonight to the Rangers and that both teams win Tuesday, Thursday when they play. A win for the Jets next Saturday would mean that they leapfrog the New York Islanders into the playoffs.
And, I mean, the Islanders have been a great story. I really do think they've been a really interesting story. But they aren't as talented overall, top to bottom, as the New York Rangers are. So you could argue that you want the team with less talent to take it over the Rangers because you think they might have a better chance of fading. There's so many ways to look at it. Now, at the end of the day, you mentioned to Drew last week on Wednesday's show that on Tuesday is a really good idea.
This coming Tuesday, yes. You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, this coming Tuesday, they'll know exactly where they stand. Everybody will have played the same number of games as them, and then you have six games in which you got to sprint to the finish, and, you know, win those six, maybe you're in. Lose more than one of those six, you're probably not in.
And then, you know, we'll talk about this into the summer if they don't make the playoffs, but then you get into the classic spot of being the worst thing you can be.
Ninth in the conference.
Tweener. Yeah. You're ninth in the conference, so you get the worst pick out of well, there's a lottery, but you're likely to get the lowest pick or close to it in the draft of teams that haven't made the playoffs.
Yeah. You're and drafting so, you're not 13th getting, or 14th as opposed to...
You're not getting a top 10 pick, and you're not getting the playoff experience. That's the worst place to be for an organization.
We call that the Calgary Flames position, or at least for the last 5 years prior to this one. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to delve deep into the situation that is Dustin Byfuglien. Spend about an hour on that question. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli. We were just there, had a nice pre-show breakfast, of course. Conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or dine in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been your deli destination for nearly 30 years. Check out their website at bernsteinsdeli.com. Now open on Sundays at 9 a.m.
Is it true, Drew, that you got a two-stroke penalty for lifting up Ezra's bread and moving it back 2 yards onto your plate?
I actually just ate the bread. That's true. And as he tried to stab me with a fork as well. So I was doubly penalized, as it were. We're going to start talking about Dustin Byfuglien for about the next hour or so. So, of course, we do encourage your tweets at Illegal Curve regarding this issue. You know, Richie, you wrote an article this week on illegalcurve.com, and we'll send that out via Twitter momentarily, discussing Dustin Byfuglien and his future with the Winnipeg Jets. His future, whether it be at defenseman, at a forward position, which a lot of people have been clamoring for a number of years now, or even as a trade candidate for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's start with Dustin Byfuglien as a forward for the Jets. You know, I think the first caveat you have to put on that, before you can do anything else, is that in his current state, in his current shape, Dustin Byfuglien is not equipped to be an NHL forward.
You know, he's not in good enough shape right now, Drew, to be an effective NHL forward, I think, or at least as effective as he can be potential-wise. Or close to it. When you look at the Jets' need, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff has mentioned, and he's not the most, you know, forthright in terms of his plan, understandably so in some cases, but he says, you know, we need a right winger. And right now they have Blake Wheeler playing right wing, and then after that there's a significant drop-off in terms of talent. And you have Kyle Wellwood, you have Antti Miettinen, you have Chris Thorburn, but let's be honest here, guys. None of those guys are over third-line players, if that. And the Jets need to fill that top six right wing spot. You could argue whether or not you think Blake Wheeler is a right winger, a first-line right winger, or a second-line right winger. I think that's for another show. But the idea is, how do you fill that need? And one way to fill it is internally. And by that, I mean you move Dustin Byfuglien from the back end, as Coach Noel did in the Islanders game. And then I guess a bit for the Habs game, I think it was. And you put him on the right side, on one of the top six, as a top six right winger. Now, I agree with Drew that you have to be able as to have him in better shape, because he can't get in on the forecheck and he can't skate and can't be as effective if he's at his current weight. But it is an option. And one, I think the Jets are probably considering internally.
I don't know if they're considering it internally. I think that they probably should be considering it internally. He's played forward before for the Chicago Blackhawks. He's got a lot of offensive skill. But, I mean, it does come back to his physical condition. Everyone knows his physical condition isn't very good. But in his current physical condition, he's a pretty good defenseman. And he's a pretty good hockey player in general. So, you know, for the Jets, they don't have anyone in St. John's that they can call up and put in a first-line right-wing role. They don't have anyone really to play a second-line right-wing role. You have Dustin Byfuglien, who's under contract for 3 more years at, you know, 5.2 or whatever. And, you know, it should be an option. Now, whether he wants to do it, you know, is a huge factor in the equation.
Let me ask you guys this question, as y'all start with you. How much, you know, Dustin Byfuglien's been pretty honest, and I appreciate that. You always appreciate a player's honesty when he says that he prefers defense. How much should the preference of the player factor into the decision that the team makes with this regard? Ezzy, you want to start with that?
I guess it factors in quite a bit. I mean, if he's not, if he doesn't want to play forward, then doesn't the conversation end right there?
Well,
but I mean, if he's a team player and they ask him to play forward, you'd think that he would take it under consideration because it's something that you know, would help the team. So I mean, there's a little bit of taking it for the team, and there's a little bit of, you know, whether he wants to play forward or defense. I'd have to think that he would be willing to consider it, and he probably would play forward if the team really felt that that was the best way that he could contribute to the team. So I mean, you know, short answer, I think it does play a role.
I think this question is brought up partially because of the fact they played him on forward for a period of time, a short period of time, but a period of time. I think it's also brought up by the fact that there's very high, people hold Jacob Trouba, who recently signed a contract, in very high regard. And Jacob Trouba is a right-hand shooting, right-side defenseman. And if people think he can play and be as effective as, say, Dougie Hamilton in Boston, a guy who's emerged as on the second pairing in Boston, on the right side in a top four role.
On a team that is a Stanley Cup contender.
The question then is, if he's possibly able to do that, then you, as Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, have options. Because if you think Trouba is capable of playing that much, that quickly, and that's entirely hypothetical, then you have Bogosian, Byfuglien, and Trouba all playing the right side. There's just not enough minutes to go around. And that brings about this question. And, you know, sure, you could switch and put one of them on the other side, but that's a big adjustment, and maybe that's not exactly where they flourish. So you're not going to do it with Trouba either. You're not going to bring up a young defenseman and put him on the opposite side of where he usually plays and try and get him going in the NHL. That's just not fair.
It seems like the guy, if they had to ask one of them to switch sides, the guy they would ask would be Bogosian.
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know the answer, but it provides them with options, which is why I think playing him at forward is an option, depending on how Trouba fits in. Now, you may say, okay, this decision may be put off of a year, and you might say, well, Trouba could really succeed on the third pairing and slowly work his way into the NHL, and that may be okay. But another point you need to discuss is, and we'll talk about it in the next segment, is Dustin Byfuglien's overall defensive deficiencies, which are a factor. So and what he can bring you on offense and what's available offensively. And what I mean by if you look at the free agent market, you know, what, how can you fill the offensive need that you have?
Right.
And can you know, we've talked about it before on the show that Dustin Byfuglien making 5.2 as his cap hit. So $5.2 million against the cap for the next three seasons. His actual salary is above that. His actual salary next season is 5.75. The following season, it's 5.75. And the final season, 2015-16, he's actually making $6 million. But to me, his cap hit in this year and years prior, you'd say, based on the way the team's structured, you know, they get far more value out of him for playing him on defense than forward. More minutes, he's a better player there, in many opinions. Having said that, if you combine him and Trouba and average out the contracts, you may say, well, based on Trouba's entry-level contract, which is extremely valuable to an organization, we can afford to put Byfuglien at forward because it makes more sense financially.
Because it's really, you know, if you have Dustin Byfuglien's contract, when you consider it with Trouba's, yeah, you're talking, you know, maybe he's a $3 million forward on average as opposed to a $5.6 million forward if, you know, instead of Trouba playing those minutes, it's just a replacement player.
And he's played an effective right wing before, but you also have to take into account who he was playing with.
Right.
Jonathan Toews and Kane or whoever they were lining up with at that time. I mean, Jonathan Toews is arguably a top three centerman in the National Hockey League. The Jets don't have anything close to that. So would he be as effective in that regard, too?
And those are all really, you know, good questions in regards to that. I do think that, going back to my previous question, I think his attitude, and I'm not saying he's got a bad attitude because I don't think he does, but, you know, when you say to a guy, you know, you're asking anybody to move out of their comfort zone, mm-hmm, I think that's a really big adjustment for a guy to make. And I don't know that the risk involved with that outweighs the, you know, is less than the reward that they can potentially get for that.
I agree with that. I think that's a huge factor. And his psyche, I think especially, is one that you have to take into account, because Dustin Byfuglien at times seems to be a little bit sensitive. Not necessarily. I don't think he's affected so much by the outside influence of people, you know, the media. I do think he's a little bit sensitive probably to criticism from the coaching staff and from maybe other players. And I think they've kind of handled him with kid gloves. And I think how they handle this situation will be interesting. Because let's be honest here. Claude Noel has been far more aggressive towards Dustin Byfuglien over the past week and a half than he has been the season prior and the first 30 games of this season. He has decided enough is enough in terms of his defensive decisions. And so he started to crack the whip. He cuts down on his ice time. Whether he wants to push that over to Charlie Huddy or not, we know who's making the final decision, and it's Claude Noel. And he's taken away the ice time. He's thrown him up a forward, and he threw him up a forward during a game, really not giving him the option of saying no.
Yeah.
So he's kind of saying, hold on a second.
Sink or swim in that situation.
But he's kind of saying, I'm in charge here. You know, we can handle you with kid gloves for only a certain amount of time. You're making $5.2 million. He's also 28, guys. He's not 22 anymore.
Shouldn't you know what you're getting out of a guy when he's 28? Leppard doesn't change his spots and all that?
Well, we'll talk about that in two segments and three segments in terms of the trade options, because let's be honest here. Dustin Byfuglien, I want to expand on this. Dustin Byfuglien is the kind of guy that GMs fear trading.
Because he's going to come back and bite you in the ass. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Dustin Byfuglien as a defenseman. You're live on TSN 1290. 30 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN 1290. .ca. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. Get in touch with David Carr of Monopoly Realty at 204-230-6129 or find him online at davidjohncarr.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We're looking for your comments in regards to our question about where you think Dustin Byfuglien belongs, forward, defense, or as trade bait for the Winnipeg Jets. We spent the last segment talking about Dustin Byfuglien as a forward. Now let's talk about Dustin Byfuglien as a defenseman, which is where most Jets fans are best acquainted with him and his body of work over the past 18 months or so. Is Dustin Byfuglien a game-changing defenseman based on his overall body of work and his skill set in the offensive zone?
He's game-changing.
for better or worse?
Both, yeah, both ways. And that's the thing. And that's what makes him so maddening. That's what makes him such a polarizing figure in the Winnipeg hockey, you know, the hockey scene, the NHL scene. Because, you know, you look at it from one end, you say, well, this guy can just change a game offensively. He can pass the puck. He can shoot the puck. He has great vision. He has soft hands. He can jump into the play. He can change the game off. He can change the game in an offensive way. But his defensive play is poor. Even if he's not jumping up and pinching at bad times, his defensive play is just not great.
When he's just in his zone, is his standard positioning, you mean?
And that's what frustrates coaching staff, because I think the coaching staff sees a guy who can really think the game well enough to defend and just doesn't want to. And, you know, he gives it and he takes it away. I mean, and you talk about his point output. It's, you know, say 50 points for an 80-game season. You say, well, not many NHL defensemen can do that. True. But not many NHL defensemen have given up a ton of what he's doing, you know, on the back end. He just makes a lot of mistakes. And so, sure, he wants to play there. Let's establish that he likes to play defense. But the question is, you know, how much does he help you versus how much does he hurt you versus what your other options are? Now, remember, the Jets have been in position last year and this season without many options. Buffon's far and away better than the rest of the crew in terms of, you know, him and Bogosian, far and away better than the rest of the crew on the right side. Even aside from Enstrom on the left side, I mean, the team does not have a lot of depth, and we'll talk about that.
Everybody else on the right side is either a fringe prospect or a waiver wire pickup or, you know.
So it's not like there's internal competition here. It's not like it's in Chicago where he's playing behind Keith, Seabrook, all these guys. He can slot in on the third pairing and just do what he does. It's a different story. And he's too talented to play on the third pairing. So the question is, do you take him for what he is? Hope to improve him defensively, expect that he likely won't at 28 improve too much, although he hasn't played that many years on defense. And you know, you take your shot that way, or do you say, we know what we got, we can trade what we got here, because we know at the end of the day what he's going to be and how much he'll give us offensively and how much he'll take it away in the offense, in the defensive zone.
Is his perceived value around the league perhaps greater than his actual value on a game-in, game-out basis?
I don't know the answer to that. It's a good question, though. I mean, you're still in an egotistical world in the NHL where I think people in the game, as would think they can change Bufflin. I mean, that's sports, isn't it? We can do a better job of what another team's doing. And, again, that gets back to the fear of trading him. He's like Alexei Kovalev in that way.
Tantalizing by his prospects, but can you ever harness it into a complete package?
And the Rangers took a long time to trade Alexei Kovalev. I believe it was in 98 for Peter Nedved, who was kind of a tantalizing, you know, skill player in his own way. But the idea was it took him a long time to finally say, hey, we know what we got here. And even then, he flourished in Pittsburgh and in Montreal a little bit. So there is that risk. And let's be clear here. We haven't seen, there hasn't been a ton of work here in terms of the entire body of work of Kevin Cheveldayoff. But I think the impression is he's not somebody to, you know, he's more conservative than a risk taker. Now, that works both ways. He's more conservative than a risk taker, meaning he's probably likely not to make a big move as opposed to making a big move. At the same time, Dustin Bufflin is the epitome of a risk taker on the ice. And maybe that is something that Kevin Cheveldayoff's averse to.
Well, you know, the Jets are in a position where probably his biggest defensive lapse in terms of costing the Jets a game that jumps to my mind, at least, is that game against Philadelphia last year where Pavlik made something like 50 saves and the Jets just needed one last defensive stop and Bufflin was out of position and didn't take the body and Philly ended up tying the game. I believe it was Van Riemsdyk or was it Simmons last year?
There's been a lot of them, Drew.
But that was the one that's the most glaring that I can remember.
There was one this year, I think it was Carolina at the end of the second period. And
sure, when he didn't cover to wrap up the guy's stick at that point.
And every defenseman makes errors, does he? But, I mean, his have been fairly glaring and they've been fairly consistent, to be honest, over the past season and a bit.
I think you've got a pretty good thesis here, Richie, and I think that's what prompted you to write this article. And, I think if you want to even narrow the focus here a little bit as far as Dustin Bufflin goes, going forward, he has to get better defensively. His skating has to get better. I am a huge fan of Big Buff, and I think there are a lot of people in Winnipeg that are a fan of Big Buff. And, you know, Drew asked the question, is it possible that we overvalue him in Winnipeg – as opposed to how other teams value him? And I think the answer is yes. I think Byfuglien is treated with kid gloves, and I think it hasn't been until maybe the last 3 or 4 weeks that Dustin Byfuglien has been the more focal point of criticism. You know, even though I love Byfuglien, I mean, there are plays where he looks pretty slow out there. He doesn't look like he is in the right position. And you know, it's easy for me to point these out, but it's not something that I think he would disagree with or Claude Noël would disagree with. Claude Noël's not going to come, you know, out in front of the media after a win and start criticizing things. What you get with Byfuglien is a unique skill set. You get a guy who has the ability to take defensemen wide. He's got size. He's almost as dangerous as, you know, on the rush as he is in the corners when he's very tough to knock off the puck. But as far as, you know, where he's at in his career, he has to lose weight and he has to get better at the defensive side of the game. That's if he plays forward or defense. Yeah. I mean, he's not at the end of his career here. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 27, 28 years old here, you know, and he's a guy that was not a top prospect. And, you know, Chicago gave him a chance when, you know, there were other guys that they could have acquired off of the free agent market when on their cup run against the Philadelphia Flyers. But because, you know, of what he offers, they turned him into a first-line right winger. Now, as a defenseman, you know, you need a big guy like that, but, you know, he's slower. I mean, the fact is, when Byfuglien's in flight, it's unbelievable. There aren't too many guys that are 250, 260 pounds that can dangle like he can. Yep. But then when he gets, you know, stationary in his own zone, you know, he has trouble. So, you know, as far as, you know, Byfuglien personally goes and the Jets coaching staff goes, they have to monitor their minutes, monitor how he's playing. And it's not like they don't do this. It's not like I'm here, you know, spouting out new concepts. But, you know, if we're having this conversation a year from now, Richie, then we know that they haven't addressed it. We shouldn't be the reason why we're having this conversation now is because, let's be honest, you know, for all the jokes aside, Richie and Drew, you know, of people calling into the post-game show with Adam Wozny and Rick Ralph and, you know, everybody saying put Byfuglien forward, the reality is Claude Noël put Byfuglien on forward. So it wasn't just, you know, some pie-in-the-sky idea. He's a guy that they're having a little bit of trouble using him, deciding where he needs to go. Now, the last three wins at home, everyone's saying, okay, well, why are the guys on a legal curve talking about this now? Well, hey, just because you win three games at home doesn't mean you sweep everything under the rug.
Three games against substandard competition.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, when the Jets are going to go up against the Islanders, who Richie mentioned off-air, have had so much success against the Jets, a guy like John Tavares and Matt Molson, fast guys that can control the play down low, in addition to, you know, if you want to call it a north-south game, Dustin Byfuglien doesn't do too well against a guy like John Tavares. Whereas a guy like Zdeno Chara does a lot better because he's learned how to play the NHL game and he's learned how to use his speed. So I think at the very, you know, small level, Richie, you know, as far as your article goes and your idea of, you know, where he's best suited and what they could get for him, I think at the very least he has to improve for his value to increase.
That's a good point, Andy. All good points. I think his weight issue is an interesting one, and there's two factors here. You can look at it from a number of ways. The first way is, okay, they got him the beginning of last season. You know, they acquired the team. Everything was a rush. I don't think Dustin Byfuglien's weight was a foremost concern in terms of the transition of organizations from Atlanta to Winnipeg.
Sure.
Then you look at this season. Well, they couldn't actually contact him during the lockout. So during the period of September, they could contact him up until September 15th, I believe it was, until the lockout ended sometime in January. They couldn't contact him. So how do you keep his weight under control? Now, the other side of that is, well, during the season, you can keep his weight under control, or at least attempt to, and he hasn't been able to. So you can look at that from both angles as well.
But it would be interesting. I think that's a good point. It will be interesting to see, now that you have sort of, you know, their feet are on the ground, they're no longer rushing around to move a franchise, and they actually have a full offseason in which they can contact the player and make sure that he's doing the, sort of the training that they're interested in and they want him to do. It'll be interesting to see what sort of shape he comes into at that point in time. Some guys, and this is in life, might not be self-motivators where they can keep their themselves under control. They might need a helping hand, and they might need a sort of a heavy helping hand, and the last 2 years, the Jets really haven't been able to provide that in this instance.
Well, Drew, as far as Byfuglien goes, if he wasn't happy with his playing time, and let's get this, you know, and this has been said many times on the station before, Byfuglien is a big body type. Dustin Byfuglien's not going to turn into a, you know, world fitness model, you know, over the next 6 months. But if Byfuglien wants to keep up his ice time, he's going to have to get in better cardiovascular shape. Is it not as simple as that? I mean, you look at Buff, and I'll say it again. I am a big fan of Buff. I know we're going to get into, you know, his trade options. I don't think the Jets should trade him, and I think that's because he offers a unique element to the Jets. But, you know, if he wants to keep playing, let's say that he, you know, just for argument's sake, he stays defense. If he wants to play 25, 28 minutes a game getting into the playoffs, he's gotten get in better shape. It's easy for me to say that for someone who's also out of shape. But, you know, that's kind of where we're at right now, where we're in a shortened season, and it's clear that all of the games in so few nights, Richie, are really affecting him.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to look at the trade possibilities, and we're going to look at some comparable defensemen in the sense that they're more offensively skilled who have been traded in the last number of years. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're discussing Dustin Byfuglien, where is his best value, defense, forward, or potentially just trade bait. We want to hear your comments. Tweet at us at Illegal Curve. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, as part of their participation in the Winnipeg Comedy Festival, Trent McClellan and Martha Chavez are going to be there. Trent McClellan at 7:45 tonight at Rumors. 10:30 p.m. tonight, Martha Chavez at Rumors. And, of course, some special guests have been dropping by the club throughout the course of the week that are in town for the Comedy Festival. Get tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com or by giving them a call at 204-488-4520. Gentlemen, there have been a number of trades in the NHL over the last, say, 3-4 years that have involved offensively inclined defensemen being traded from one team to another. The primary names that come to mind are Brent Burns, who was traded from the Minnesota Wild to the San Jose Sharks.
That's a 2011 draft in St. Paul.
Right. Jack Johnson, who was traded from the Los Angeles Kings to the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for Jeff Carter. And some other things that we'll discuss. Dion Phaneuf, who went from Calgary to Toronto. And Alex Goligoski, who went from Pittsburgh to Dallas in the James Neal trade. So there's been a sort of, both of those trades have been, you can sort of group them in two different ways. A player in exchange for another solid NHL player, mm-hmm. You know, like Jack Johnson and a first round pick in exchange for Jeff Carter. Or they've been player for prospects. You know, Alex Goligoski, Brent Burns and a second round pick for Setoguchi, Coyle, and a first round pick, which is sort of guys who are on their way up or who haven't quite cracked the NHL at that point in time. So let's talk about, you know, what can the Winnipeg Jets potentially expect to get in a trade if they put Dustin Byfuglien on the market?
Well, I mean, you mentioned, Drew, there's two kinds of trades that you can make. I mean, there's many different types of trades you can make, of course. But the trades based on past precedent are, you know, as you mentioned, a player for player or a player for a package. And I think the first question before we analyze what type of players, because we don't want to just rumor monger here, I think what we want to analyze is if the team is going to make a trade, you know, what is in the team's best interest? Is it to add younger players that fill a number of needs, or is it to add an older player, not old, but an older player in his mid-20s.
An established NHLer.
Established player who fills an immediate need. I mean, I think that's the first question to ask.
And I know you want to go through the four trades that we were talking about before, Richie.
And these are, and we should, let me just interrupt here for a second, Ezzy, and say, these are strictly hypotheticals in terms of what the Jets could expect. Yep. The kind of player they would expect, as opposed to this is what we're hearing, because right. We're not hearing anything along those lines right. Whatsoever. These are just a theoretical discussion that you can take forward and, you know, keep in the back of your mind. Sorry, Ezzy.
What I think the Jets should do, based on where they are on the, whatever you want to call it, development curve, is try to get a couple of younger prospects. And I know Richie wants to get into it here and reference the article, but... first off, I don't think the Jets are getting a Jeff Carter for Dustin Byfuglien and a first-round pick. But or do I think necessarily that there is that guy out there? Where, you know, it's tough to. I mean, Carter wanted out of Columbus, right? So, but as far as the Jets go, there are glaring holes at center and right wing. And, you have to start looking to the future. Mark Scheifele is going to get a shot, Richie, to make the Jets next year. I don't think, you know, anybody in this room is going to say that Mark Scheifele can turn into a number one center for the Jets next year. No offense to Mark Scheifele, mm-hmm. but that's asking something of a player that most guys don't get asked to in your first season in the NHL, put the team on your back and be our first-line center, especially, you know, with the Western Conference next year. So I know you want to get into it, but I do think that the Jets, if they decide to trade Byfuglien, it should be to get a couple of young players as opposed to an established NHLer.
I'm probably along the same lines as well, and everything is dependent on a case-by-case basis, but I do agree with you. I think there are a lot of holes on this roster. I think the system, I know obviously last year's drafting class, apparently the past two drafts class, there's certainly some bright lights there yep. that people are excited about. But I think overall the system depth isn't great. And I think if you're going to be the Winnipeg Jets organization and you want to base your team on draft development, not spend a lot of money in free agency, you almost have to turn a good player into a number of assets to be able to have that kind of depth. And then you always hear about Nashville, about a comparison for the team that they want to closely align themselves with in terms of how they were built. And I think that being the case, Nashville is a team that likes to have the depth through the system, especially on the back end. You know, they may not turn out Jonathan Bloom or Ryan Ellis and all these guys who are Ellis they have high hopes for.
Yep.
But the idea is you have replacements there. You know, you can trade a Cody Franzen because you have somebody else who can take that spot. And the Jets lack that depth.
And we should mention, too, that this isn't, you know, the new regime true north. I mean, that's the Atlanta Thrashers left the cupboard bare. I think Chevy's done a very good job drafting in his 2 years. If you look at Adam Lowry, like Lucas Sutter, even though he struggled with the Saskatoon Blades, but if you look at the picks they made over the last 2 years, that's not, you know, a criticism to Chevy and True North. It's more so that what they inherited was an AHL system that, you know, even though they did well, you know, in their first year, you know, there wasn't a lot of prospects, and a lot of their first rounders weren't home runs, let's be honest.
And another thing to keep into account is this. If you're trading Dustin Byfuglien, and you're not getting, if you're trading him for a right winger, and you're not getting a defenseman back, well then conceivably, based upon what you expect for Jacob Trouba and some other defensemen, you're creating a hole. I already think there is a hole. You know, we go through in the article.
Yep.
I think there's a left side defenseman hole. The Jets do not have a top four left-handed defenseman behind Enstrom or above Enstrom. And I think when you trade Byfuglien, you already have a hole. So you are creating another hole. So can you afford to fill a need, but then create another one? Or are you doing that? Or are you better off trading him and trying to fill both of them with younger players who you think can slowly work their way up? So there's many factors that play here. And Byfuglien's also 28, guys, and he's got 3 years left on his contract after the season. That's a pretty appealing thing for another team. You have him. You know he's at $5.2 million a year, and you know how long you have him for until he's 31. You can really analyze whether you want to give him a big deal on the other side of 30.
You have some cost certainty.
And you got to factor in, too, sorry to interrupt, Richie, but you also have to factor in Bogo could be getting a five-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
3 years from now, Trouba could be getting a 5 or 6 year deal. Wheeler might be getting a 5 year deal. Is Dustin Byfuglien in the long term plans? I'm not talking about 2 years from now. I'm talking about 10 years from now. Is he in those long term plans? And that's why I think he might be the most tradable guy that the Jets have.
Well, and that's why I think that's why this discussion is taking place. Again, we're not here to create rumor to talk. We're talking about possibilities and options.
We're here to create magic.
That's true also. But, you know, we're if you look at it, in the article I talked about possibilities in terms of one-for-one trades, for example. So if you want to fill a right-wing need, you'd be, one, you know, I'll trade one-for-one for a guy like Jakub Voracek.
So are you trading?
Or a guy like Wayne Simmonds. And because I think that's the kind of one-for-one talent you're talking about.
So are you getting a top six right-winger, but are you getting a top three right-winger?
That's up for debate. Is he, you know, it's up for debate.
Well, I mean, you know, and you have to look at it.
I don't know this concrete. Anything concrete. This is just my opinion.
Take the names of the players sort of out of the equation. You look at the Jets from, if you take any team in the NHL and say you have a glut, you have a strength on your right side of your defense,
right,
and you have a gaping holes, you know, on your left side of your defense or on your right wing forwards or even up the middle on, as centermen. Every single NHL team should be making a move from a position of strength. Just when you have too many assets on one in one area, you turn those assets into, you know, you turn those assets and you fix holes in your other parts of the game, regardless of the players that are involved.
And you make the move earlier rather than later, because the years go by, the less value he has because there's less time on his contract.
And this is why it's important too. I look at, you know, the upcoming UFA class, and we know Getzlaff and Perry are off the market. One of the guys that I think, you know, for me is would be, I've mentioned this guy many times, is Nathan Horton. Now, is he going to re-sign with the Boston Bruins? There's a good chance he does. Does he want to come to Winnipeg? I don't know. The chances of the Jets landing a guy like Nathan Horton, and I'm not, you know, starting the rumor mill here. I'm just saying that he's a guy, he's big, he's, you know, 27 years old, he's in the prime of his career. A guy like him is the type of guy you'd want to sign to a 3 or 4 year deal at $5 million a year, in my opinion. I think Richie would agree. But, you know, is he even enough? I mean, the Jets need...
He's a UFA.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. For me, he's one of the most highly, tantalizing UFAs. But the Jets, because the Jets probably, you know, aren't in that position, Drew, I think that's why you do, to what you were saying, you do have to trade from a position of strength for the Jets that is on defense, and you have to fill those needs. Now, Richie mentioned the left side D. For me, it's up the middle. I mean, teams are built up the middle. Look at the LA Kings and what they did last year by acquiring Jeff Carter. You got to start up the middle, and unfortunately, Olli Jokinen hasn't filled that void.
And we were talking, as you mentioned, the UFA, and while he was speaking about that, I was looking in terms of the best defenseman available on the market, another factor. There's so many factors, but if you look at who's available in the market this offseason, the best two defensemen are probably Mark Streit and Sergei Gonchar, especially offensively, although the defensive class overall is weak. The question is, do you get into a perfect storm? Do you go to the draft with a top five offensive talent on the back end, at least in my opinion, with a very weak free agent class, and with some teams like Philly and Detroit, the teams we use as examples here,
in the article,
clamoring to add maybe an offensive defenseman to fill the loss of Pronger, to fill the loss of Lidstrom, and there's nothing really on the free agent market to fill that need. Maybe you have the exact scenario which nets you a nice return.
And you create a bidding war. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll continue on this topic when we come back. You're live on TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air, like the expert that he is. This segment of the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Drew, I want to quickly just read a tweet and follow us at Illegal Curve. Send us a tweet if you're listening, if you don't already follow us. We're talking about Bufflin. We want to get your input. I'm sure we'll get Dave Manuk to throw in a toque if we really like your tweet. I want to read a tweet here from one of our good friends, a guy who's always listening to our show, Beller. He says, "I love Buff, but if the Jets could get two top six forwards with term, I'd say pull the trigger." And that's really what we're talking about here, because, you know, Bufflin is a fan favorite. But, you know, the Jets are in a situation where he might be one of the most tradable guys. And, you know, if you can get a good return for him, you know, you might have to do it. So keep tweeting at us, but that's, you know, what we're talking about here.
Before the first season the Jets came back, they actually had the most money percentage-wise of their cap spent on defensemen. Another factor to take into account.
Right. And when your defense isn't the best in the league, that's not a good thing.
That's exactly right, Ezzy. You look at Bogosian, he's a pending RFA. We'll talk about that down the road. But, you know, Bufflin's at 5.2, Enstrom's at 5.75. By my math, that's slightly under $11 million. Right. If Bogosian makes ballpark $5 million, you're looking at $16 million bucks for three defensemen. Yeah. If Trouba's at an entry-level deal and he hits his you know, is around 1.8, maybe Mark Stewart 1.7, you still have another need. How much money are you spending on D? So that's a question that you also have to look at.
And Richie, is there one GM or you know, fan or, you know, member of the media that's going to say Ron Hainsey isn't overpaid? I mean, you got to factor that in there.
But you got to fill his spot.
That's the problem. I mean, we've talked about the void that Ron Hainsey is going to leave. I mean, for all of his warts and the fact he's overpaid, which is no fault of his or no fault of this current management team, you know, there's still a significant... I mean, you're now... The Jets do not have an option right now in-house for that second-pairing left-side defenseman.
I mean, you could argue that, you know, you like the way that Grant Clutson's played, and that's fine, and I think he has played well. But he's not the defensive lockdown guy they need to play in that spot.
No, I think he's probably earned himself a strong consideration for a contract next year.
Yep.
And Zach Redmond, I would have to think, is in line for a, you know, a one-way deal next year, probably as is Paul Postma. But you'd have to think as well that, you know, another veteran defenseman on the free agent market is also a strong option at this point.
Let me go back to what we've been talking about. If you're the Winnipeg Jets, you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, and you decide that you're going to move Dustin Byfuglien, are you more interested in a, you know, a top six forward for a, you know, in exchange for Dustin Byfuglien straight up, or are you more interested in, say, the package that the Minnesota Wild got for Brent Burns, you know, which you mentioned in the article there, Richie?
Well, you know, looking at just finding comparable and using Philly and Detroit as teams who are needing defensemen by all accounts.
Yeah.
He looked at Detroit and said, okay, you know, if Detroit and Winnipeg are to match up, because Philly's a tough matchup for a trade with prospects, because Philly's prospects are really all on the roster at this point. Not that Detroit necessarily isn't, but Detroit has more guys in the system. So
something about, so let me just interrupt for you a second there. Something about, I just don't see Dustin Byfuglien as a Detroit Red Wing in my mind.
You may not, Drew, but you don't know what he could do under Mike Babcock either. And again, we're talking about a business where people think change people.
Right.
And I mean, that applies to life as well. But if you look at Winnipeg and Detroit, for example, as a matchup, theoretically, okay, the package idea, and you want to align it similar to the Brent Burns deal. You know, Dustin Byfuglien and a second rounder, conceivably, for something like a Gustav Nyquist, Jakob Kindle, and a first round pick. So in that way, what you're doing is you're saying, okay, we think Kindle can be a top four guy. I mean, there's perspectives are different in terms of prospects. Maybe they would have liked Kindle to come along more quickly in Detroit. But Kindle, you know, it's Nyquist, you're hoping for a top six forward, and then a first round pick. Won't be a great pick, but it'll be a first-round pick, and you're getting an upgrade over the second-round pick. That, to me, is the kind of deal. I mean, it's similar to the Minnesota, what Minnesota netted for Brent Burns. Now, Charlie Coyle is a better prospect, I think, than either of those players, as far as I can tell.
Brent Burns and a second-round pick went to San Jose. Devin Setoguchi, Charlie Coyle, and a first-round pick went to Minnesota. You look at this trade now, a couple of years after the fact, and
Chuck Fletcher looks pretty smart.
It seems like a good trade for Minnesota.
And also, I mean, Brent Burns had a contract, didn't have a contract, and Dustin Byfuglien does have one. But Burns was 26 years old, and Byfuglien's 28. So there's some factors there that go really both ways in terms of that argument. But Drew, I think that's what you're looking at. And I think you're looking at that kind of a package. Are you going to get a blockbuster number one, Nail Yakupov? No, you're not going to get that. You're just not. So you have to temper your expectations. You have to think you're going to get a couple of nice prospects and a draft pick for a guy who can play now and put up offensive numbers.
And then let's talk about the other options for the trade. You mentioned using Philadelphia as an example.
Well, we mentioned, you know,
a team that's very defensively needy.
Well, with Philly, you have a cap problem. You have a ton of money tied up in the cap. It's not a great free agent class, and you don't have many prospects in the system. So by default, you have to trade a roster player who's pretty good for a guy like Byfuglien. And we talked about, you know, Jakub Voracek's taking the next step. But if you're Cheveldayoff, you're probably asking for him. And if you're Philly, you may say, hey, Wayne Simmonds is taking the next step. We don't want to trade him either. But if you're Cheveldayoff, you're asking for one of them. Some may say that Simmonds isn't enough. Some may say it's too much. And some may say, based on this year, that both of those players are too much. But, you know, it's not just a one-year sample size in terms of a player's career. So that's kind of what you're looking at. And you have to decide, you know, do you want to play Byfuglien at forward? Do you want to play him at defense? Do you want to deal him? But I think within the next year or so, you kind of have to make that decision and kind of go with it. Because the sooner you close in on his last 2 years or year of his deal, and not only that, he gets to 30, his trade value declines. You may also say, hey, more years on defense exposes him to the defensive deficiencies, or exposes the league, excuse me, to the defensive deficiencies that he has, which decreases his value. And also, organizationally speaking, the depth on defense, if Trouba ends up being a really good player, are you then wasting one of your assets because you're not utilizing him enough? And not only that, you're not using him enough, and then you're not filling the need that you have theoretically up front.
Right, and again, you have to, you know, especially for, you know, young kids or passive, you know, fans, which for the Jets there aren't many, but, you know, when you're talking about the future here, you know, the Jets have a chance at making the playoffs, you know, whether it's 30% or 40%, they still do have a chance. But, you know, when you talk about Dustin Byfuglien and what the Winnipeg Jets are going to do with him in the future, this isn't just about, you know, Claude Noël's decision in Montreal to put Byfuglien up at forward. I mean, the fact is that he's a defenseman that has struggled at times this year, and he's a defenseman that has excelled at times this year. Certain games this year, Dustin Byfuglien has single-handedly won the game for the Jets, whether it's the, you know, the game-winning goals or other plays he's made to create offense. You know, he can pass the puck just as well as he can shoot it, which is pretty damn good. So, you know, the Jets have to make a decision that is either him sticking at defense and then, you know, pairing him up with someone who masks his defensive deficiencies, or maybe keeping it open that, you know, they can play him at defense and on forward. But either way, you can't have a situation where you're putting a guy at forward and then benching him because he doesn't play how you want him to play on forward. That is a situation where you have one of the highest paid guys on the team. You know, you're not managing one of your assets well. And that's kind of, I think, what you're trying to avoid going forward.
Before we go to break, I'll ask you guys both, what do you think ends up happening here? Or what would, both things, what do you think ends up happening and what would you do?
I'll start off and then let Richie go. I mean, I think that, you know, the Jets will keep Byfuglien on defense, and I think the Jets will keep Byfuglien as a Jet. Moving forward, I think that the Jets should consider trading him if he doesn't show an improvement with his defensive play, and if they can make their team better in the future. And I think it's as simple as that. If they can get a package like the Minnesota Wild got for Brent Burns, not at this year's draft, but the year after, I mean, you know, Dustin Byfuglien carries a hefty price tag. And I think that's something too, Richie, that you factored in here. You give up that salary and you take on less salary, where, well, that could be money to go after a first-line center.
Good point. Drew, I think that they explore the option of trading him in the draft. Whether or not we'll find out about it or not will be another question. I do think they explore the option. Would I trade him? I think that's... There's too many factors, as we've mentioned, to take into account. I mean, if you don't get a great offer for Dustin Byfuglien, you don't have to trade him. You finally have options to shovel day off. So I don't know what I would do because I don't know what the offers are going to be, but I do believe the Jets are going to seriously entertain trading him in the offseason.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, Chuck Gormley from Comcast Sportsnet in Washington is going to join us to talk about the Washington Capitals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from CSNWashington.com. He covers the Washington Capitals, Chuck Gormley. Chuck, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Chuck, we got to start with the moves that the Capitals made at the trade deadline. The big one, of course, being acquiring Martin Irat from the Nashville Predators, primarily for Philippe Forsberg, the Caps' first-round draft pick from a couple years ago. First of all, worth noting that Irat is going to be back in the lineup today for the Caps. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. He'll be playing on the second line with Mike Ribeiro and Troy Brouwer.
Very good for, obviously, Caps fans at that point. Why did the Caps make that move? What was their thinking behind that move, acquiring a guy for, you know, a hefty price tag of their former first-round pick?
You're right, it was a hefty price tag. And the reasoning that George McPhee gave was that they were deep on the right side. And now that Alex Ovechkin is playing on the right side and Troy Brower's on that side, they weren't sure, and they have Tom Wilson coming up too, another top prospect. And they saw Forsberg, also at right wing, and saw themselves stacked on that side, but they were weak on the left side. So even though Marty Erat has played a lot of his career on the right side, Adam Oates is big on the left-handed shooters being on the left side. And so it looks like that's where they're going to use him. And it turns out to be a really good deal on their part, at least in the short term, because Brooks Like looks like he could be out for the rest of this season. He's contemplating surgery. So it looks like Marty Erat will be on that second line probably for the rest of the way, and they're going to need that.
Chuck, how big of a loss is Brooks Like?
I think it's a huge loss. I mean, the guy played all kinds of minutes, penalty kill, shorthanded. Penalty kill, power play, played on that second line, was starting to get his groove back on, but, you know, they've missed him all year, and I think that's a big reason that they started the way they did, but it doesn't look good for him right now. I mean, if he does end up having surgery, it would probably be sports hernia surgery, which means 4 to 6 weeks, which means second round of the playoffs. So, a lot has to get done between now and then for the Caps to get into the playoffs.
In terms of the team just turning it around and turning it on, really, I think that probably begins with Alexander Ovechkin. What's been the biggest difference, Chuck, in terms of his overall play that has led him to return to the form that we saw years ago?
Well, he's playing right wing, which is a big switch for him, and I think that's part of the reason for him getting off to such a slow start. You know, a lot of people questioned him. I had my doubts when... You know, I saw him last year finish with 38 goals, I think the year before 32. And I wondered, you know, if he'd ever score 40 goals again. I mean, that was a real concern. He had become very predictable coming down the left side. Defensemen knew it. They were blocking shots or making him shoot wide of the net. He was leading the league in shots, but also leading the league in missed shots. And I had my doubts, but I understand why Adam Oates made the switch for him to move to right side, because now you're starting to see it come to fruition. I mean, he's getting shots from areas of the ice that he's never scored from before, and he's becoming far less predictable, and I think that's the biggest difference.
Chuck, the Caps have won six in a row, as you know. How much of a part has Braden Holtby played in that?
He's been good. Two of the games went to Michael Neuber. You'll see Braden Holtby back in tonight, and I think with a couple days off between today's game and the next game, and then no back-to-backs, I wouldn't be surprised if Braden Holtby played it all the way through. So he's been great. He handles the puck well. He's handling the puck more now than he did in the beginning of the season, and he's like another defenseman back there. I like him. I think he's got a lot of, I don't know what you call that. It's that desire and that grit that you don't often find in a goaltender, and I like that about him. He wants to be in there. Like I said, when Michael Neuberth went in there, he wanted those two starts, even though he's played a lot in the last 2 months. But I like him a lot, and I think he can carry this team in the playoffs.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined on the line by Chuck Gormley from csnwashington.com, where he covers the Washington Capitals.
Chuck, it took the Capitals a while to get going this season. How much of that has to do with, you know, Adam Oates and implementing a new system? How much of that has to do with overall conditioning?
That's a good question. I've asked a couple players about conditioning, and, you know, I guess because so many different players use so many different strategies during the lockout to stay in shape, it's hard to put a gauge on that to see which teams are in better shape than others. But I do think that the implementation of a new system did take time. They were thinking out there, and when hockey players think too much, things usually don't go well. So you could see the hesitation in their game early. They weren't playing really bad hockey, and that's the one thing that stands up to me, is that Adam Oates did not want to switch anything up. You know, he said, listen, we're playing the right way, we're losing games, but I like what we're doing. And that was hard to sell at 2-8-1. But he was right. I mean, they did lose a lot of close games in the beginning. It looked really bad when they were sitting at 15th in the Eastern Conference. But I'll tell you what, a couple wins and then two collapses by Carolina and Winnipeg at the same time allowed them to jump from 14 or 13 all the way up to third in the conference. And that looks a whole lot better when you wake up in the morning.
Chuck, when you look at the Capitals roster and you look at the back end of the defense there, it might not be, say, a who's who of defense after you go through, say, Mike Green, who people remember from his really offensive heydays, and Carlson and Carl Alzner. But is the back end deep enough for the Caps to make a run in the playoffs?
That's another good question. That's something that can only be determined in a playoff run, because you know how it is. Every team wants to expose your weakest link. Well, you know, what surprised me during this trip, they called up a kid named Steve Alexi that no one knew much about at all. Mm-hmm. And he's provided this grit and kind of a sure-handedness back there on the third pairing where you would expect a team to expose that. He's been really good, and I think he surprised everyone. He didn't have an NHL contract until this year, and he's been providing some grit. John Erskine, like you mentioned, he's on the second pairing with John Carlson, and he's a guy that didn't play a whole lot under Dale Hunter last year, and no one expected much out of him besides maybe 70 minutes, and he's been playing top 4 minutes and playing with a lot of grit. So they're not the same blue line that they used to be. I mean, I remember the Capitals used to be a blue line that you could actually beat up, and now it's not the case. I mean, you can go in there and Forwards are going to pay a price for crossing the blue line, and that's probably something the Caps haven't had in a long time.
Mike Ribeiro's had a great offensive season, Mike. He's slowed down a little bit, but he's been great. Do you have any inside knowledge or any further developments as far as what the Capitals' plan is for Ribeiro going into the offseason?
I'm not quite sure what their hand is. I mean, they offered him a contract. He turned it down just before the trade deadline. I guess a lot depends. I don't think he'll sign a contract until after the season ends, and I think he wants to see what the price tag is out there. Like, what will teams pay him? And you know what? It's not necessarily a bad thing for the Capitals, because now they get to see him play down the stretch and in the playoffs, and that's where he has to make his mark. He had a really strong, I was just doing some of the math, he had a really strong first 28 games of the season, but in the last 19, he's kind of fallen off. And I asked him about that yesterday, because he took a bad penalty the last game. He took a high-sticking call just 4 seconds into a power play and negated his own power play. And he said, you know, sometimes he does that in games to get himself engaged emotionally. He's a guy that you want that emotion, but you don't want him over the top, mm-hmm. because then he's going to hurt you. And I think a lot depends on how he plays in these last 6-7 games of the regular season and then in the playoffs, to see whether he'll earn the kind of money that he would like to earn, which is probably upwards of $5 million a year, or maybe even more.
Chuck, we've talked on this show and on our Wednesday show a lot about the Capitals' power play, just how dynamic it is and how many options there are, and you know, Backstrom and Ribeiro being so dangerous, and Green and Carlson, and that's really continued. Their play has just continued to be successful. Yeah. On the other hand, you see the penalty kill, second last in the league. Is that going to hold the team back?
It could, and it's something we talked to Adam Oates about yesterday. He said if there's anything that he wants to correct down the stretch, it's that penalty killing. It's hard to put a finger on why they're not playing well. I don't see any glaring problems in terms of personnel or you know, face-off is probably one thing that I look at. I mean, they have not done well in the face-off circle, and I think if they can improve on draws, I think their penalty kill will improve. But they have been riding that power play all season long. And you're right, they have so many different options on there with Ovi positioning himself in that left circle. Mm-hmm. He becomes a decoy, really. And because they have guys like Backstrom and Ribeiro, they can play off of that. I mean, just the other night, Ribeiro stared at Ovi until Eric Staal went over to cheat in his direction, and Troy Brouwer was left all alone in the slot. So that's something that they're probably going to need to carry through the playoffs. If there are a lot of calls in the playoffs, which we all won't know until they start.
It's a great point, Jackie. You do watch that power play a lot, and their teams do cheat. The players cheat a ton towards Ovechkin. In Washington, you know, for the perspective, because we're in Winnipeg, and the perspective here is, you know, Washington is a team the Jets want to chase, but there are other teams that, you know, that they're focused on. Is the primary focus in Washington just on the Jets winning the division, or are they concerned about some of the other teams if they drop behind the Jets?
I think they're just looking at that division title. And it's funny because I'd say 3 or 4 weeks ago, if you would have asked me if they have a shot at the division title, I'd say no way. The only way they get in is in the eighth spot. And Troy Brower said, all along, we've looked at that Southeast division as a division we could win. And even when they were 10 points back, and what surprises me is, you know, the Caps just beat Carolina. And the last, I guess, the two times before that when they met was a month ago, and Carolina had a 10-point lead. They could have made it 12 points, and the Caps came back and won a game. They were trailing 2-0, and Carolina just kind of fell off the map after that. So it's been a really strange year. I don't think anyone expected this division to flip-flop the way it has.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, the Capitals come into town to play that Thursday-Friday doubleheader in Winnipeg, and the Jets win those two games. The Jets are up 13 points on the Capitals. If that happens, Chuck, do the Capitals sell?
Yeah. You know, you're right, because it was right before the trade deadline, and we were all thinking, okay, this four-game stretch for the Caps will determine whether George McPhee unloads or adds. And he added mainly because of those two games. I mean, a lot of players on the Caps talked about those two games turning around their season. They had lost in Pittsburgh two nights before, and Adam Oates will tell you even to this day that was their best game of the year, and they lost 2-1. And I was talking with Braden Holtby about this. I said, when did you see this turnaround begin? And he said, it was before that Winnipeg game. He said, usually the guys are talking about things they did that day, things they're going to do that night. And he said, the whole locker room was quiet and focused. And it was probably their two best games of the year, and they came for the Capitals at the right time.
Chuck Gormley from CSNWashington.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Chuck. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.